Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Detroit Resurrected to Bankruptcy and Back is a nonfiction work of narrative journalism by Nathan Bomey that examines Detroit's historic Chapter 9 bankruptcy and the city's slow emergence from fiscal collapse, drawing on extensive reporting and interviews. The book is less a technical financial manual than a human-centered account of how one of America's best-known cities reached the brink of liquidation and then negotiated a path forward. Its core subject is the 2013 bankruptcy filing, but its larger purpose is to explain how politics, law, labor, philanthropy, and civic identity collided in a crisis that affected pensions, public services, and major cultural institutions, such as the Detroit Institute of Arts. Bomey presents the bankruptcy as a story of competing obligations and hard compromises, especially the grand bargain that helped protect retirees and the art museum while giving the city room to recover. The book is aimed at readers interested in urban policy, public finance, and modern American city history. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, how Detroit became the largest U.S. city to enter Chapter 9 bankruptcy. The book begins with the scale of Detroit's collapse, framing bankruptcy not as an isolated legal event but as the culmination of years of population loss, shrinking tax revenue, deteriorating services, and unresolved debt. Bomey uses this backdrop to show why Chapter 9 became the only available option. This matters because municipal bankruptcy is fundamentally different from corporate bankruptcy. A city cannot simply liquidate its way out of failure without damaging the public systems residents depend on. By presenting Detroit as a city under severe structural strain, the book helps readers understand that the filing was not a sudden surprise, but the result of long-term erosion in governance, finance, and trust. The emphasis on context also prevents the story from becoming a narrow courtroom narrative. Instead, Detroit's bankruptcy is shown as a civic breakdown in which streets, lighting, pensions, and neighborhood stability all became part of the same crisis. Secondly, the grand bargain as a negotiated solution to competing moral and financial claims. A central contribution of the book is its explanation of the grand bargain, the compromise that helped stabilize Detroit's exit from bankruptcies. This arrangement brought together city officials, the state, philanthropies, and others to reduce pressure on the Detroit Institute of Arts while softening losses for pensioners. Bomey treats the bargain as more than a rescue plan. It is a case study in how public institutions can be preserved when no single actor can satisfy every claim in full. The important analytical point is that the bargain required accepting partial sacrifice from multiple sides rather than demanding one perfect solution. That makes the book valuable for readers who want to understand public negotiation under extreme constraint. It shows how policy outcomes are often built through bargaining among groups with different legal rights, moral arguments, and political leverage. In Detroit, the compromise was not idealized as a cure-all, but presented as a workable settlement that balanced fiscal necessity against civic and cultural loss. Thirdly, people, not abstractions, drive the book's account of bankruptcy. Bomey deliberately focuses on the individuals who shaped the crisis rather than on accounting alone. The narrative highlights figures such as Governor Rick Snyder, Emergency Manager Kevin Orr, Judge Stephen Rhodes, retirees, union leaders, and civic advocates. This approach gives the book its distinctive texture. Bankruptcy is explained through decision-making, conflict, and responsibility rather than through spreadsheets alone. The human focus matters because municipal finance can seem remote, yet its consequences are felt in everyday life through pensions, service delivery, and public confidence. By foregrounding the people who had to make hard calls or defend their interests, the book turns policy into a study of leadership and constraint. It also shows that the crisis was not simply about numbers, but about trust, broken promises, and the legitimacy of institutions. Readers come away with a clearer sense of how public outcomes depend on personalities, incentives, and timing as much as on formal rules. Fourthly, the book links bankruptcy law to urban reinvention and public trust. Another major theme is the connection between financial restructuring and the broader effort to restore confidence in the city. The book does not portray bankruptcy as an endpoint. Instead, it treats the legal process as one step in a larger struggle to make Detroit governable and investable again. That distinction is important because recovery in a city is not only about balancing budgets. It also requires credible administration, better collection systems, restored service delivery, and signs that outside investors and residents can believe in the future. Bomey's reporting suggests that legal resolution alone would not have been enough without political commitment and institutional rebuilding. This makes the book especially useful for readers studying urban policy, because it links formal insolvency proceedings with practical questions about governance capacity. Detroit's recovery becomes a test of whether a city can use bankruptcy not merely to survive, but to reset expectations and rebuild the social contract between residents and government. Lastly, Detroit Resurrected as a model for understanding American city decline and recovery. The book reaches beyond Detroit itself by treating the city as a warning case and a possible reference point for other struggling municipalities. Detroit's bankruptcy exposed the consequences of deindustrialization, population loss, fiscal mismanagement, and political fragmentation. But the recovery also showed that large cities can regain momentum when institutions coordinate around a credible plan. Bomi's narrative is therefore useful not just as local history, but as a framework for thinking about how American cities absorb long economic shocks. The value of this perspective is that it connects civic decline to broader questions of governance, philanthropy, labor relations, and state intervention. Readers interested in urban economics or public administration will find that the book explains how recovery depends on trust, compromise, and sustained investment rather than a single dramatic fix. Its lasting significance lies in showing how a city can move from symbolic failure to cautious renewal without pretending that all damage has been erased. In conclusion, Detroit Resurrected to Bankruptcy and Back should be read by anyone interested in urban history, municipal finance, political negotiation, or the lived consequences of public insolvency. It is especially useful for readers who want a clear account of how a major city can enter bankruptcy without reducing the story to legal jargon. Bomi's reporting gives the book practical value for students of public policy and journalism because it shows how large institutional crises are shaped by personalities, power, and trade-offs. It also offers intellectual value to general readers by translating a complicated fiscal event into a coherent narrative about responsibility, compromise, and recovery. What distinguishes it from many books on finance or city decline is its balance between reporting and interpretation. It explains the mechanics of bankruptcy while staying focused on the human stakes for retirees, officials, and civic institutions. The result is a grounded, readable account of one of the most important municipal crises in modern American history and of the uneasy path toward rebuilding trust after failure. If you would like to support Nathan Bomi, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.